might die before they got me back to Maester Mullen at the Shadow Tower, so they carried me to a wilding village where we knew an old wise woman did some healing. She was dead, as it happened, but her daughter saw to me, cleaned my wounds, sewed me up, and fed me porridge and potions until I was strong enough to ride again. And she sewed up the rents in my cloak as well, with some scarlet silk from a shy that her grandmother had pulled from the wreck of a cog washed up on the frozen shore. It was the greatest treasure she had, and her gift to me.
He swept the cloak back over his shoulders.
But at the Shadow Tower, I was given a new wool cloak from stores, black and black, and trimmed with black, to go with my black breeches and black boots, my black doublet and black mail. The new cloak had no frays, nor rips, nor tears, and most of all, no red. The men of the Night's Watch dressed in black, Sir Denis Malister reminded me sternly, as if I had forgotten. My old cloak was fit for burning now, he said. I left the next morning for a place where a kiss was not a crime, and a man could wear any cloak he chose.
He closed the clasp and sat back down again.
And you, John Snow?
John took another swallow of mead. There is only one tale that he might believe. You say you were at Winterfell, the night my father feasted King Robert?
I did say it, for I was.
Then you saw us all, Prince Joffrey and Prince Tommen, Princess Myrcella, my brothers Rob and Bran and Rickon, my sisters Arya and Sansa. You saw them walk the center aisle with every eye upon them and take their seats at the table just below the dais where the king and queen were seated.
I remember.
And did you see where I was seated, Mance? He leaned forward. Did you see where they put the bastard? Mance Rayder looked at John's face for a long moment.
I think we had best find you a new cloak,
the king said, holding out his hand.
The rain had all but stopped as the first wan light suffused the eastern sky, but it had done its work. Lord Ashford's men had removed the barriers, and the tourney field was one great morass of gray-brown mud and torn grass. Tendrils of fog were writhing along the ground like pale white snakes as Dunk made his way back toward the lists. Steely Pate walked with him. The viewing stand had already begun to fill, the lords and ladies clutching their cloaks tight about them against the morning chill. Small folk were drifting toward the field as well, and hundreds of them already stood along the fence. So many come to see me die, thought Dunk bitterly, but he wronged them. A few steps farther on, a woman called out,
Good fortune to you!
An old man stepped up to take his hand and said,
May the gods give you strength, sir.
Then a begging brother in a tattered brown robe said a blessing on his sword, and a maid kissed his cheek.
They are for me? Why?
He asked Pate.
What am I to them?
A knight who remembered his vows,
the smith said. They found Raymond outside the challenger's paddock at the south end of the lists, waiting with his cousin's horse and Dunk's. Thunder tossed restlessly beneath the weight of chinet, chamfron, and blanket of heavy mail. Pate inspected the armor and pronounced it good work, even though someone else had forged it. Wherever the armor had come from, Dunk was grateful. Then he saw the others, the one-eyed man with the salt-and-pepper beard, the young knight in the striped yellow and black surcoat with the beehives on the shield.
Robin Risling and Humphrey Beesbury, he thought in astonishment, and Sir Humphrey Harding as well.
Harding was mounted on Arian's red charger, now bartered in his red and white diamonds. He went to them.
Sirs, I am in your debt.
The debt is Arian's,
Sir Humphrey Harding replied, and we mean to collect it.
I had heard your leg was broken.
You heard the truth,
Harding said.
I cannot walk, but so long as I can sit a horse, I can fight.
Raymond took Dunk aside.
I hoped Harding would want another chance at Arion, and he did. As it happens, the other Humphrey is his brother by marriage. Egg is responsible for Sir Robin, whom he knew from other tourneys. So you are five.
Six,
said Dunk in wonder, pointing. A knight was entering the paddock, his squire leading his charger behind him.
The Laughing Storm.
A head taller than Sir Raymond, and almost of a height with Dunk, Sir Lionel wore a cloth of gold surcoat, bearing the crowned stag of House Baratheon, and carried his antlered helm under his arm. Dunk reached for his hand.
Sir Lionel, I cannot thank you enough for coming, nor Sir Stefan for bringing you.
Sir Stefan,
Sir Lionel gave him a puzzled look.
It was your squire who came to me, the boy, Aegon. My own lad tried to chase him off, but he slipped between his legs and turned a flagon of wine over my head.
He laughed.
There's not been a trial of seven for more than 100 years. Do you know that? I was not about to miss a chance to fight the Kingsguard knights and tweak Prince Maker's nose in the bargain.
Six,
Dunk said hopefully to Raymond Fossaway as Sir Lionel joined the others.
Your cousin will bring the last, surely.
A roar went up from the crowd. At the north end of the meadow, a column of knights came trotting out of the river mist. The three Kingsguard came first, like ghosts in their gleaming white enamel armor, long white cloaks trailing behind them. Even their shields were white, blank and clean as a field of new-fallen snow. Behind rode Prince Maekar and his sons. Arion was mounted on a dapple gray, orange and red flickering through the slashes in the horse's caparison at each stride. His brother's Destrier was a smaller bay, armored in overlapping black and gold scales. A green silk plume trailed from Darren's helm. It was their father who made the most fearsome appearance, however. Black curved dragon teeth ran across his shoulders, along the crest of his helm and down his back, and the huge spiked mace strapped to his saddle was as deadly looking a weapon as Dunk had ever seen.
Six! Raymond exclaimed suddenly. They are only six!
It was true, Dunk saw.
Three black knights and three white. They are a man short as well.
Was it possible that Arion had not been able to find a seventh man? What would that mean? Would they fight six against six if neither found a seventh? Egg slipped up beside him as he was trying to puzzle it out.
Sir, it's time you donned your armor.
Thank you, squire. If you would be so good.
Steely Pate lent the lad a hand. Hauberk and gorget, greaves and gauntlet, coif and codpiece, they turned him into steel, checking each buckle and each clasp thrice. Sir Lionel sat sharpening his sword on a whetstone, while the Humphreys talked quietly, Sir Robin prayed, and Raymond Fossaway paced back and forth, wondering where his cousin had got to. Dunk was fully armored by the time Sir Stefan finally appeared.
Raymond, he called. My mail, if you please.
He had changed into a padded doublet to wear beneath his steel.
Sir Stefan, said Dunk, what of your friends? We need another knight to make our seven.
You need two, I fear,
Sir Stefan said. Raymond laced up the back of the hauberk.
My lord?
Dunk did not understand.
Two?
Sir Stefan picked up a gauntlet of fine lobstered steel and slid his left hand into it, flexing his fingers.
I see five here,
he said while Raymond fastened his sword belt.
Beesbury, Risling, Harding, Baratheon, and yourself.
And you,
said Dunk.
You're the sixth.
I am the seventh, said Sir Stefan, smiling. But for the other side, I fight with Prince Arion and the accusers.
Raymond had been about to hand his cousin his helm. He stopped as if struck.
No.
Yes,
Sir Stefan shrugged.
Sir Duncan understands, I am sure. I have a duty to my prince.
You told him to rely on you.
Raymond had gone pale.
Did I?
He took the helm from his cousin's hands.
No doubt I was sincere at the time. Bring me my horse.
get him yourself," said Raymond angrily. "If you think I wish any part of this, you're as thick as you are vile."
"Vile?"
Sir Stefan tisked.
"Guard your tongue, Raymond. We're both apples from the same tree, and you are my squire. Or have you forgotten your vows? No, have you forgotten yours? You swore to be a knight. I shall be more than a knight before this day is done.
Lord Fossoway, I like the sound of that." Smiling, he pulled on his other gauntlet, turned away and crossed the paddock to his horse. Though the other defenders stared at him with contemptuous eyes, no one made a move to stop him. Dunk watched Sir Stefan lead his destrier back across the field. His hands coiled into fists, but his throat felt too raw for speech.
No words would move the likes of him anyway.
"Knight me." Raymond put a hand on Dunk's shoulder and turned him.
"I will take my cousin's place. Sir Duncan, knight me."
He went to one knee. Frowning, Dunk moved a hand to the hilt of his longsword, then hesitated.
"Raymond, I should not."
"You must. Without me, you are only five." "The lad has the truth of it," said Sir Lionel Baratheon. "Do it, Sir Duncan. Any knight can make a knight." "Do you doubt my courage?" Raymond asked.
"No,"
said Dunk.
"Not that, but..."
Still he hesitated. A fanfare of trumpets cut the misty morning air. Egg came running up to them.
"Sir, Lord Ashford summons you."
The laughing storm gave an impatient shake of the head.
"Go to him, Sir Duncan. I'll give Squire Raymond his knighthood."
He slid his sword out of his sheath and shouldered Dunk aside.
"Raymond of House Fossoway,"
he began solemnly, touching the blade to the squire's right shoulder.
"In the name of the warrior, I charge you to be brave."
The sword moved from his right shoulder to his left.
"In the name of the father, I charge you to be just."
Back to the right.
"In the name of the mother, I charge you to defend the young and innocent."
The left.
"In the name of the maid, I charge you to protect all women."
Dunk left them there, feeling as relieved as he was guilty.
"We are still one short,"
he thought as Egg held Thunder for him.
"Where will I find another man?"
He turned the horse and rode slowly toward the viewing stand, where Lord Ashford stood waiting. From the north end of the lists, Prince Arion advanced to meet him.
"Sir Duncan," he said cheerfully, "it would seem you have only five champions."
"Six,"
said Dunk.
"Sir Lionel is knighting Raymond Fossoway. We will fight you six against seven."
Men had won at far worse odds, he knew. But Lord Ashford shook his head.
"That is not permitted, sir. If you cannot find another knight to take your side, you must be declared guilty of the crimes of which you stand accused."
"Guilty?"
thought Dunk.
"Guilty of loosening a tooth, and for that I must die? My lord, I beg a moment."
"You have it."
Dunk rode slowly along the fence. The viewing stand was crowded with knights.
"My lords,"
he called to them,
"do none of you remember Sir Arlan of Pennytree? I was his squire. We served many of you. Ate at your tables and slept in your halls."
He saw Manfred Dundarian seated in the highest tier.
"Sir Arlan took a wound in your lord father's service."
The knight said something to the lady beside him, paying no heed. Dunk was forced to move on.
"Lord Lannister, Sir Arlan unhorsed you once in tourney."
The Grey Lion examined his gloved hands, studiedly refusing to raise his eyes.
"He was a good man, and he taught me how to be a knight. Not only sword and lance, but honor. A knight defends the innocent," he said. "That's all I did. I need one more knight to fight beside me. One, that's all. Lord Caron. Lord Swan?"
Lord Swan laughed softly as Lord Caron whispered in his ear. Dunk reined up before Sir Otho Bracken, lowering his voice.
"Sir Otho, all know you for a great champion. Join us, I beg you. In the names of the old gods and the new, my cause is just."
"That may be,"
said the brute of Bracken, who had at least the grace to reply. But it is your cause, not mine. I know you not, boy. Heartsick, Dunk wheeled Thunder and raced back and forth before the tiers of pale, cold men. Despair made him shout.
Are there no true knights among you?
Only silence answered. Across the field, Prince Arion laughed.
The dragon is not mocked, he called out.
Then came a voice.
I will take Sir Duncan's side.
A black stallion emerged from out of the river mists, a black knight on his back. Dunk saw the dragon shield and the red enamel crest upon his helm with its three roaring heads.
The young prince! Gods be good, is it truly him?
Lord Ashford made the same mistake.
Prince Valar?
No.
The black knight lifted the visor of his helm.
I did not think to enter the lists at Ashford, my lord, so I brought no armor. My son was good enough to lend me his.
Prince Baylor smiled almost sadly. The accusers were thrown into confusion, Dunk could see. Prince Maekar spurred his mount forward.
Brother, have you taken leave of your senses?
He pointed a mailed finger at Dunk.
This man attacked my son!
This man protected the weak, as every true knight must, replied Prince Baylor. Let the gods determine if he was right or wrong.
He gave a tug on his reins, turned Valar's huge black destrier, and trotted to the south end of the field. Dunk brought Thunder up beside him, and the other defenders gathered round them, Robin Risling and Sir Lionel the Humphreys.
Good men all, but are they good enough? Where is Raymond?
Sir Raymond, if you please.
He cantered up, a grim smile lighting his face beneath his plumed helm.
My pardon, sir. I needed to make a small change to my sigil, lest I be mistaken for my dishonorable cousin.
He showed them all his shield. The polished golden field remained the same, and the Fossaway apple, but this apple was green instead of red.
I fear I am still not ripe, but better green than wormy, eh?
Sir Lionel laughed, and Dunk grinned despite himself. Even Prince Baylor seemed to approve. Lord Ashford's septon had come to the front of the viewing stand and raised his crystal to call the throng to prayer.
Attend me, all of you, Baylor said quietly.
The accusers will be armed with heavy war lances for the first charge. Lances of ash, 8 feet long, banded against splitting and tipped with a steel point sharp enough to drive through plate with the weight of a war horse behind it.
We shall use the same,
said Sir Humphrey Beesbury. Behind him, the septon was calling on the seven to look down and judge this dispute, and grant victory to the men whose cause was just.
No,
Baylor said.
We will arm ourselves with tourney lances instead.
Tourney lances are made to break,
objected Raymond.
They are also made 12 feet long. If our points strike home, theirs cannot touch us. Aim for helm or chest. In a tourney, it is a gallant thing to break your lance against a foe's shield, but here it may well mean death. If we can unhorse them and keep our own saddles, the advantage is ours.
He glanced to Dunk.
If Sir Duncan is killed, it is considered that the gods have judged him guilty, and the contest is over. If both of his accusers are slain, or withdraw their accusations, the same is true. Elsewise, all seven of one side or the other must perish or yield for the trial to end.
Prince Daeron will not fight,
Dunk said.
Not well, anyway,
laughed Sir Lionel.
Against that, we have three of the white swords to contend with.
Baylor took that calmly.
My brother erred when he demanded that the Kingsguard fight for his son. Their oath forbids them to harm a prince of the blood. Fortunately, I am such.
He gave them a faint smile.
Keep the others off me long enough, and I shall deal with the Kingsguard.
My prince, is that chivalrous?
Asked Sir Lionel Baratheon as the septon was finishing his invocation.
The gods will let us know, said Baylor Breakspear.
A deep expectant silence had fallen across Ashford Meadow. 80 yards away, Arian's gray stallion trumpeted with impatience and pawed the muddy ground. Thunder was very still by comparison. He was an older horse, veteran of 50 fights, and he knew what was expected of him. Egg handed Dunk up his shield.
"May the gods be with you, sir,"
the boy said. The sight of his elm tree and shooting star gave him heart. Dunk slid his left arm through the strap and tightened his fingers around the grip.
"Oak and iron guard me well, or else I'm dead and doomed to hell."
Steely Pate brought his lance to him, but Egg insisted that it must be he who put it into Dunk's hand. To either side, his companions took up their own lances and spread out in a long line. Prince Baylor was to his right and Sir Lionel to his left, but the narrow eye slit of the great helm limited Dunk's vision to what was directly ahead of him. The viewing stand was gone, and likewise the small folk crowding the fence. There was only the muddy field, the pale blowing mist, the river, town, and castle to the north, and the princeling on his gray charger with flames on his helm and a dragon on his shield. Dunk watched Arian's squire hand him a war lance, 8 feet long and black as night.
"He will put that through my heart if he can."
From the outside, Ser Uthor's tent was very plain, a large square box of dun-colored sailcloth staked to the ground with hempen ropes. A silver snail adorned the center pole above a long gray pennon, but that was the only decoration. "Wait here," Dunk told Egg. The boy had hold of Thunder's lead. The big brown destrier was laden with Dunk's arms and armor, even to his new old shield. The Gallows Knight. What a dismal mystery knight I proved to be. "I won't be long." He ducked his head and stooped to shoulder through the flap. The tent's exterior left him ill-prepared for the comforts he found within. The ground beneath his feet was carpeted in woven mirish rugs, rich with color. An ornate trestle table stood surrounded by camp chairs. The feather bed was covered with soft cushions, and an iron brazier burned perfumed incense. Ser Uthor sat at the table, a pile of gold and silver before him, and a flagon of wine at his elbow, counting coins with his squire, a gawky fellow close in age to Dunk. From time to time, the snail would bite a coin or set one aside. "I see I still have much to teach you, Will," Dunk heard him say. "This coin has been clipped, the other shaved. And this one?" A gold piece danced across his fingers. "Look at the coins before taking them. Here, tell me what you see." The dragon spun through the air. Will tried to catch it, but it bounced off his fingers and fell to the ground. He had to get down on his knees to find it. When he did, he turned it over twice before saying, "This one's good, my lord. There's a dragon on the one side and a king on the other." Underleaf glanced toward Dunk. "The Hanged Man. It's good to see you moving about, sir. I feared I'd killed you. Will you do me a kindness and instruct my squire as to the nature of dragons? Will, give Sir Duncan the coin." Dunk had no choice but to take it. He unhorsed me. Must he make me caper for him, too? Frowning, he hefted the coin in his palm, examined both sides, tasted it. Gold, not shaved or clipped. The weight feels right. I'd have taken it too, my lord. What's wrong with it? The king. Dunk took a closer look. The face on the coin was young, clean-shaved, handsome. King Ares was bearded on his coins, the same as old King Aegon. King Daeron, who'd come between them, had been clean-shaved, but this wasn't him. The coin did not appear worn enough to be from before Aegon the Unworthy. Dunk scowled at the word beneath the head. 6 letters. They looked the same as he had seen on other dragons. Daeron, the letters read. But Dunk knew the face of Daeron the Good, and this wasn't him. When he looked again, he saw something odd about the shape of the 4th letter. It wasn't Daemon, he blurted out. It says Daemon. There never was any King Daemon, though, only the Pretender. Daemon Blackfyre struck his own coinage during his rebellion. It's gold, though, Will argued. If it's gold, it should be just as good as them other dragons, my lord. The snail clouted him along the side of the head. Cretin? Aye, it's gold. Rebels' gold. Traitors' gold. It's treasonous to own such a coin, and twice as treasonous to pass it. I'll need to have this melted down. He hit the man again. Get out of my sight. This good knight and I have matters to discuss. Will wasted no time in scrambling from the tent. Have a seat, Ser Uthor said politely. Will you take wine? Here in his own tent, Underleaf seemed a different man than at the feast. A snail hides in his shell, Dunk remembered. Thank you, no. He flicked the gold coin back to Ser Uthor. Traitor's gold. Blackfyre gold. Egg said this was a traitor's tourney, but I would not listen. He owed the boy an apology. Half a cup, Underleaf insisted. You sound in need of it. He filled two cups with wine and handed one to Dunk. Out of his armor, he looked more a merchant than a knight. You've come about the forfeit, I assume. Aye. Dunk took the wine. Maybe it would help to stop his head from pounding. I brought my horse and my arms and armor. Take them with my compliments. Ser Uthor smiled. And this is where I tell you that you rode a gallant course. Dunk wondered if gallant was a chivalrous way of saying clumsy. That is good of you to say, but I think you misheard me, Ser. Would it be too bold of me to ask how you came to knighthood, Ser? Ser Arlen of Pennytree found me in Fleabottom chasing pigs. His old squire had been slain on the Redgrass field, so he needed someone to tend his mount and clean his mail. He promised he would teach me sword and lance and how to ride a horse if I would come and serve him. So I did. A charming tale. Though if I were you, I would leave out the part about the pigs. Pray, where is your Ser Arlen now? He died. I buried him. I see. Did you take him home to Pennytree? I didn't know where it was. Dunk had never seen the old man's Pennytree. Ser Arlen seldom spoke of it, no more than Dunk was wont to speak of Fleabottom. I buried him on a hillside facing west, so he could see the sun go down. The camp chair creaked alarmingly beneath his weight. Ser Uthor resumed his seat. I have my own armor and a better horse than yours. What do I want with some old dun nag and a sack of dinted plate and rusty mail? Steely Pate made that armor, Dunk said with a touch of anger. Egg has taken good care of it. There's not a spot of rust on my mail, and the steel is good and strong. Strong and heavy, Ser Uthor complained, and too big for any man of normal size. You are uncommon large, Duncan the Tall. As for your horse, he is too old to ride and too stringy to eat. Thunder is not so young as he used to be, Dunk admitted, and my armor is large, as you say. You could sell it, though. In Lannisport and King's Landing there are plenty of smiths who will take it off your hands. For a tenth of what it's worth, perhaps, said Ser Uthor, and only to melt down for the metal. No, it's sweet silver I require, not old iron. The coin of the realm. Now, do you wish to ransom back your arms or no? Dunk turned the wine cup in his hands, frowning. It was solid silver, with a line of golden snails inlaid around the lip. The wine was gold as well, and heady on the tongue. If wishes were fishes, I'd pay, gladly. Only, you don't have two stags to lock horns. If you would lend my horse and armor back to me, I could pay the ransom later, once I found the coin. The snail looked amused. Where would you find it, pray? I could take service with some lord, or... It was hard to get the words out. They made him feel a beggar. It might take a few years, but I would pay you, I swear it. On your honor as a knight? Dunk flushed. I could make my mark upon a parchment. A hedge knight's scratch upon a scrap of paper? Ser Uthor rolled his eyes. Good to wipe my arse, no more. You are a hedge knight, too. Now you insult me. I ride where I will and serve no man but myself, true, but it has been many a year since I last slept beneath a hedge. I find that inns are far more comfortable. I am attorney knight, the best that you are ever like to meet. The best? His arrogance made Dunk angry. The Laughing Storm might not agree, sir, nor Leo Longthorn, nor the Brute of Bracken. At Ashford Meadow, no one spoke of snails. Why is that, if you are such a famous tourney champion? Have you heard me name myself a champion? That way lies renown. I would sooner have the pox, thank you, but no. I shall win my next joust, aye, but in the final I shall fall. Butterwell has 30 dragons for the knight who comes second. That will suffice for me, along with some goodly ransoms and the proceeds of my wagers. He gestured at the piles of silver stags and golden dragons on the table. You seem a healthy fellow and very large. Size will always impress the fools, though it means little and less in jousting. Will was able to get odds of 3-1 against me. Lord Shawnee gave 5-1, the fool. He picked up a silver stag and set it to spinning with a flick of his long fingers. The old ox will be the next to tumble. Then the knight of the pussy willows, if he survives that long. Sentiment being what it is, I should get fine odds against them both. The commons love their village heroes. Sir Glendon has hero's blood, Dunk blurted out. Oh, I do hope so. Hero's blood should be good for 2-1. Whore's blood draws poorer odds. Sir Glendon speaks about his purported sire at every opportunity, but have you noticed that he never makes mention of his mother? For good reason. He was born of a camp follower. Jenny, her name was. Penny Jenny, they called her, until the red grass field. The night before the battle, she fucked so many men that thereafter she was known as Redgrass Jenny. Fireball had her before that, I don't doubt. But so did 100 other men. Our friend Glendon presumes quite a lot, it seems to me. He does not even have red hair. Hero's blood, thought Dunk. He says he is a knight. Oh, that much is true. The boy and his sister grew up in a brothel called the Pussy Willows. After Penny Jenny died, the other whores took care of them and fed the lad the tale his mother had concocted about him being Fireball's seed. An old squire who lived nearby gave the boy his training, such that it was, in trade for ale and cunt. But being a squire, he could not knight the little bastard. Half a year ago, however, a party of knights chanced upon the brothel, and a certain Sir Morgan Dunstable took a drunken fancy to Sir Glendon's sister. As it happens, the sister was still a virgin, and Dunstable did not have the price of her maidenhead. So a bargain was struck. Sir Morgan dubbed her brother a knight right there in the Pussy Willows in front of 20 witnesses, and afterwards little sister took him upstairs and let him pluck her flower. And there you are. Any knight could make a knight. When he was squiring for Sir Arlen, Dunk had heard tales of other men who'd bought their knighthood with a kindness, or a threat, or a bag of silver coins, but never with a sister's maidenhead. That's just a tale, he heard himself say. That can't be true. I had it from Kirby Pym, who claims that he was there, a witness to the knighting. Sir Uther shrugged. Hero's son, whore's son, or both. When he faces me, the boy will fall. The lots may give you some other foe. Sir Uther arched an eyebrow. Cosgrove is as fond of silver as the next man. I promise you I shall draw the old ox next, then the boy. Would you care to wager on it? I have nothing left to wager. Dunk did not know what distressed him more, learning that the snail was bribing the master of the games to get the pairings he desired, or realizing the man had desired him. He stood. I have said what I came to say. My horse and sword are yours, and all my armor. The snail steepled his fingers. Perhaps there is another way. You are not entirely without your talents. You fall most splendidly. Ser Uthor's lips glistened when he smiled. I will lend you back your steed and armor, if you enter my service. Service? Dunk did not understand. What sort of service? You have a squire. Do you need to garrison some castle? I might if I had a castle. If truth be told, I prefer a good inn. Castles cost too much to maintain. No, the service I would require of you is that you face me in a few more tourneys. 20 should suffice. You can do that, surely. You shall have a 10th part of my winnings, and in future I promise to strike that broad chest of yours and not your head. You'd have me travel about with you to be unhorsed? Ser Uthor chuckled pleasantly. You are such a strapping specimen. No one will ever believe that some round-shouldered old man with a snail on his shield could put you down. He rubbed his chin. You need a new device yourself, by the way. That hanged man is grim enough, I grant you, but, well, he's hanging, isn't he? Dead and defeated. Something fiercer is required. A bear's head, mayhaps. A skull. Or 3 skulls, better still. A babe impaled upon a spear. And you should let your hair grow long and cultivate a beard. The wilder and more unkempt, the better. There are more of these little tourneys than you know. With the odds I'd get, we'd win enough to buy a dragon's egg before it got about that I was hopeless. I lost my armor, not my honor. You'll have thunder and my arms, no more. Pride ill becomes a beggar, Ser. You could do much worse than ride with me. At the least, I could teach you a thing or two of jousting, about which you are pig ignorant at present. You'd make a fool of me. I did that earlier, and even fools must eat. Dunk wanted to smash that smile off his face. I see why you have a snail on your shield. You are no true knight. Spoken like a true oaf. Are you so blind you cannot see your danger? Ser Uthor put his cup aside. Do you know why I struck you where I did, Ser? He got to his feet and touched Dunk lightly in the center of his chest. A coronal placed here would have put you on the ground just as quickly. The head is a smaller target. The blow is more difficult to land, though more likely to be mortal. I was paid to strike you there. Paid? Dunk backed away from him. What do you mean? 6 dragons tendered in advance, 4 more promised when you died. A paltry sum for a knight's life. Be thankful for that. Had more been offered, I might have put the point of my lance through your eye slit. Dunk felt dizzy again. Why would someone pay to have me killed? I've done no harm to any man at White Walls. Surely no one hated him that much but Aeg's brother Arion, and the Bright Prince was in exile across the Narrow Sea. Who paid you? A serving man brought the gold at sunrise, not long after the Master of the Games nailed up the pairings. His face was hooded, and he did not speak his master's name. But why? Said Dunk. I did not ask. Ser Uthor filled his cup again. I think you have more enemies than you know, Ser Duncan. How not? There are some who would say you were the cause of all our woes. Dunk felt a cold hand on his heart. Say what you mean. The snail shrugged. I may not have been at Ashford Meadow, but jousting is my bread and salt. I follow tourneys from afar as faithfully as the maesters follow stars. I know how a certain hedge knight became the cause of a trial of 7 at Ashford Meadow, resulting in the death of Balor Breakspear at his brother Makar's hand. Ser Uthor seated himself and stretched his legs out. Prince Balor was well-loved. The bright prince had friends as well, friends who will not have forgotten the cause of his exile. Think on my offer, Ser. The snail may leave a trail of slime behind him, but a little slime will do a man no harm, whilst if you dance with dragons, you must expect to burn.
Dawn came with hazy gray skies and air that burned the eyes. Dunk meant to make an early start, though after their sleepless night he did not know how far they'd get. He and Egg broke their fast on boiled eggs while Bennis was rousting the others outside for more drill. They are Osprey men and we are not, he told himself. He ate 4 of the eggs, so Eustace owed him that much, as he saw it. Egg ate 2. They washed them down with ale. We could go to Fair Isle, sir, the boy said, as they were gathering up their things. If they're being raided by the Iron Men, Lord Farman might be looking for some swords. It was a good thought. Have you ever been to Fair Isle? No, sir, Egg said. But they say it's fair. Lord Farman's seat is fair, too. It's called Faircastle. Dunk laughed. Faircastle it shall be. He felt as if a great weight had been lifted off his shoulders. I'll see to the horses, he said, when he'd tied his armour up in a bundle secured with hemp and rope. Go to the roof and get our bedrolls, squire. The last thing he wanted this morning was another confrontation with the Checky Lion. If you see Sir Eustace, let him be. I will, sir. Outside, Bennis had his recruits lined up with their spears and shields and was trying to teach them to advance in unison. The brown knight paid Dunk not the slightest heed as he crossed the yard. He will lead the whole lot of them to death. The Red Widow could be here any moment. Egg came bursting from a tower door and clattered down the wooden steps with their bedrolls. Above him, Sir Eustace stood stiffly on the balcony, his hands resting on the parapet. When his eyes met Dunk's, his moustache quivered and he quickly turned away. The air was hazy with blowing smoke. Bennis had his shield slung across his back, a tall kite shield of unpainted wood, dark with countless layers of old varnish and girded all about with iron. It bore no blazon, only a centre boss that reminded Dunk of some great eye, shut tight, as blind as he is. "How do you mean to fight her?" Dunk asked. Sir Bennis looked at his soldiers, his mouth running red with sour leaf. "Can't hold the hill with so few spears. Got to be the tower. We all hole up inside." He nodded at the door. "Only one way in. Haul up them wooden steps, and there's no way they can reach us." "Until they build some steps of their own. They might bring ropes and grapnels, too, and swarm down on you through the roof, unless they just stand back with their crossbows and fill you full of quarrels while you're trying to hold the door." The melons, beans, and barleycorns were listening to all they said. All their brave talk had blown away, though there was no breath of wind. They stood, clutching their sharpened sticks, looking at Dunk and Bennis and each other. "This lot won't do you a lick of good," Dunk said, with a nod at the ragged Osprey army. "The Red Widow's knights will cut them to pieces if you leave them in the open, and their spears won't be any use inside that tower." "They can chuck things off the roof," said Bennis. "Treb is good at chucking rocks." "He could chuck a rock or two, I suppose," said Dunk, "until one of the Widow's crossbowmen puts a bolt through him." "Sir?" Egg stood beside him. "Sir, if we mean to go, we'd best be gone, in case the Widow comes." The boy was right. "If we linger, we'll be trapped here." Yet still Dunk hesitated. "Let them go, Bennis."
"What? Lose our valiant lads?" Bennis looked at the peasants and brayed laughter. "Don't you lot be getting any notions," he warned them. "I'll gut any man who tries to run."
"Try and I'll gut you." Dunk drew his sword. "Go home, all of you," he told the small folk. "Go back to your villages and see if the fire has spared your homes and crops." No one moved. The brown knight stared at him, his mouth working. Dunk ignored him. "Go," he told the small folk once again. It was as if some god had put the word into his mouth, not the warrior. Is there a god for fools? "Go," he said again, roaring it this time. "Take your spears and shields, but go, or you won't live to see the morrow."
Do you want to kiss your wives again? Do you want to hold your children? Go home. Have you all gone deaf? They hadn't. A mad scramble ensued amongst the chickens. Big Rob trod on a hen as he made his dash, and Pate came within half a foot of disemboweling Will Bean when his own spear tripped him up. But off they went, running. The melons went one way, the beans another, the barleycorns a third. Sir Eustace was shouting down at them from above, but no one paid him any mind. They are deaf to him at least, Dunk thought. By the time the old knight emerged from his tower and came scrambling down the steps, only Dunk and Egg and Bennis remained among the chickens. "Come back!" Sir Eustace shouted at his fast-fleeing host. "You do not have my leave to go! You do not have my leave!" "No use, my lord," said Bennis. "They're gone." Sir Eustace rounded on Dunk, his moustache quivering with rage. "You had no right to send them away. No right. I told them not to go. I forbade it. I forbade you to dismiss them." "We never heard you, my lord." Egg took off his hat to fan away the smoke. The chickens were cackling too loud. The old man sank down onto Standfast's lowest step. "What did that woman offer you to deliver me to her?" he asked Dunk in a bleak voice. "How much gold did she give you to betray me, to send my lads away and leave me here alone?" "You're not alone, my lord," Dunk sheathed his sword. "I slept beneath your roof and ate your eggs this morning. I owe you some service still. I won't go slinking off with my tail between my legs. My sword's still here." He touched the hilt. "One sword?" The old knight got slowly to his feet. "What can one sword hope to do against that woman?" "Try and keep her off your land to start with." Dunk wished he were as certain as he sounded. The old knight's moustache trembled every time he took a breath. "Yes," he said at last, "better to go boldly than hide behind stone walls. Better to die a lion than a rabbit. We were the marshals of the North March for 1,000 years. I must have my armour." He started up the steps. Egg was looking up at Dunk. "I never knew you had a tail, sir," the boy said. "Do you want a clout in the ear?" "No, sir." "Do you want your armour?" "That," Dunk said, "and one thing more." There was talk of Sir Bennis coming with them, but in the end Sir Eustace commanded him to stay and hold the tower. His sword would be of little use against the odds that they were like to face, and the sight of him would inflame the widow further. The brown knight did not require much convincing. Dunk helped him knock loose the iron pegs that held the upper steps in place. Bennis clambered up them, untied the old grey hempen rope, and hauled on it with all his strength. Creaking and groaning, the wooden stair swung upward, leaving 10 feet of air between the top stone step and the tower's only entrance. Sam Stoops and his wife were both inside. The chickens would need to fend for themselves. Sitting below on his grey gelding, Sir Eustace called up to say, "If we have not returned by nightfall." "I'll ride for Highgarden, my lord, and tell Lord Tyrrell how that woman burned your wood and murdered you." Dunk followed Egg and Maester down the hill. The old man came after, his armour rattling softly. For once a wind was rising, and he could hear the flapping of his cloak. Where Watts Wood had stood, they found a smoking wasteland. The fire had largely burned itself out by the time they reached the wood, but here and there a few patches were still burning, fiery islands in a sea of ash and cinders. Elsewhere, the trunks of burned trees thrust like blackened spears into the sky. Other trees had fallen and lay athwart the west way with limbs charred and broken, dull red fires smouldering inside their hollow hearts. There were hot spots on the forest floor as well, and places where the smoke hung in the air like a hot grey haze. Sir Eustace was stricken with a fit of coughing, and for a few moments Dunk feared the old man would need to turn back, but finally it passed. They rode past the carcass of a red deer, and later on what might have been a badger. Nothing lived except the flies. Flies could live through anything, it seemed. "The field of fire must have looked like this," Sir Eustace said. "It was there our woes began. 200 years ago, the last of the Green Kings perished on that field with the finest flowers of the Reach around him. My father said the dragon fire burned so hot that their swords melted in their hands. Afterward, the blades were gathered up and went to make the Iron Throne. Highgarden passed from kings to stewards, and the Osgreys dwindled and diminished until the marshals of the North March were no more than landed knights bound in fealty to the Rowans." Dunk had nothing to say to that, so they rode in silence for a time till Sir Eustace coughed and said, "Sir Duncan, do you remember the story that I told you?
I might, sir, said Dunk. Which one?
The little lion.
I remember. He was the youngest of five sons.
Good,
he coughed again. When he slew Lancel Lannister, the Westermen turned back. Without the king there was no war. Do you understand what I am saying?
Aye, Dunk said reluctantly. Could I kill a woman? For once Dunk wished he were as thick as that castle wall. It must not come to that. I must not let it come to that.
A few green trees still stood where the Westway crossed the Checky Water. Their trunks were charred and blackened on one side. Just beyond, the water glimmered darkly. Blue and green, Dunk thought, but all the gold is gone. The smoke had veiled the sun. Sir Eustace halted when he reached the water's edge.
I took a holy vow. I will not cross that stream, not so long as the land beyond is hers.
The old knight wore mail and plate beneath his yellowed surcoat. His sword was on his hip.
What if she never comes, sir? Egg asked.
With fire and sword, Dunk thought, she'll come. She did, and within the hour. They heard her horses first, and then the faint metallic sound of clinking armour growing louder. The drifting smoke made it hard to tell how far off they were until her banner-bearer pushed through the ragged grey curtain. His staff was crowned by an iron spider, painted white and red, with the black banner of the Webbers hanging listlessly beneath. When he saw them across the water, he halted on the bank. Sir Lucas Inchfield appeared half a heartbeat later, armoured head to heel. Only then did Lady Rohan herself appear, astride a coal-black mare, decked out in strands of silvery silk like unto a spider's web. The widow's cloak was made of the same stuff. It billowed from her shoulders and her wrists, as light as air. She was armoured, too, in a suit of green enamel scale chased with gold and silver. It fit her figure like a glove and made her look as if she were garbed in summer leaves. Her long red braid hung down behind her, bouncing as she rode. Septon Sefton rode red-faced at her side, atop a big grey gelding. On her other side was her young maester, Serric, mounted on a mule. More knights came after, half a dozen of them, attended by as many esquires. A column of mounted crossbowmen brought up the rear and fanned out to either side of the road when they reached the Checky Water and saw Dunk waiting on the other side. There were 33 fighting men, all told, excluding the septon, the maester, and the widow herself. One of the knights caught Dunk's eye, a squat, bald keg of a man in mail and leather, with an angry face and an ugly goiter on his neck. The Red Widow walked her mare to the edge of the water.
Sir Eustace! Sir Duncan! She called across the stream. We saw your fire burning in the night.
Saw it! Sir Eustace shouted back. Aye, you saw it, after you made it.
That is a vile accusation. For a vile act!
I was asleep in my bed last night with my ladies all around me. The shouts from the walls awoke me, as they did almost everyone. Old men climbed up steep tower steps to look, and babes at the breast saw the red light and wept in fear. And that is all I know of your fire, sir.
It was your fire, woman, insisted Sir Eustace. My wood is gone. Gone, I say.
Septon Sefton cleared his throat.
Sir Eustace, he boomed, there are fires in the King's Wood too, and even in the Rainwood. The drought has turned all our woods to kindling.
Lady Rohan raised an arm and pointed.
Look at my fields, Osgray. How dry they are. I would have been a fool to set a fire. Had the wind changed direction, the flames might well have leapt the stream and burned out half my crops.
Might have, Sir Eustace shouted. It was my woods that burned, and you that burned them. Most like you cast some witch's spell to drive the wind, just as you used your dark arts to slay your husbands and your brothers.
Lady Rohan's face grew harder. Dunk had seen that look at Coldmoat just before she slapped him.
Prattle, she told the old man. I will waste no more words on you, sir. Produce Bennis of the Brown Shield, or we will come and take him.
That you shall not do, Sir Eustace declared in ringing tones. That you shall never do.
His moustache twitched.
Come no farther. This side of the stream is mine, and you are not wanted here. You shall have no hospitality from me, no bread and salt, not even shade and water. You come as an intruder. I forbid you to set foot on Osgray land.
Lady Rohan drew her braid over her shoulder. Sir Lucas, was all she said.
The long inch made a gesture, the crossbowmen dismounted, winched back their bowstrings with the help of hook and stirrup, and plucked quarrels from their quivers. "Now, sir," her ladyship called out, when every bow was knocked and raised and ready. "What was it you forbade me?" Dunk had heard enough. "If you cross the stream without leave, you are breaking the king's peace." Septon Sefton urged his horse forward a step. "The king will neither know nor care," he called. "We are all the mother's children, sir. For her sake, stand aside." Dunk frowned. "I don't know much of gods, Septon, but aren't we the warrior's children, too?" He rubbed the back of his neck. "If you try to cross, I'll stop you." Sir Lucas the Long Inch laughed. "Here's a hedge knight who yearns to be a hedgehog, my lady," he said to the Red Widow. "Say the word, and we'll put a dozen quarrels in him. At this distance they will punch through that armor like it was made of spit." "No, not yet, sir." Lady Rohan studied him from across the stream. "You are two men and a boy. We are 33. How do you propose to stop us crossing?" "Well," said Dunk, "I'll tell you, but only you." "As you wish." She pressed her heels into her horse and rode her out into the stream. When the water reached the mare's belly, she halted, waiting. "Here I am. Come closer, sir. I promise not to sew you in a sack." Sir Eustace grasped Dunk by the arm before he could respond. "Go to her," the old knight said, "but remember the little lion." "As you say, my lord." Dunk walked Thunder down into the water. He drew up beside her and said, "M'lady." "Sir Duncan." She reached up and laid two fingers on his swollen lip. "Did I do this, sir? No one else has slapped my face of late, m'lady. That was bad of me. A breach of hospitality. The good Septon has been scolding me." She gazed across the water at Sir Eustace. "I scarce remember Adam any longer. It was more than half my life ago. I remember that I loved him, though. I have not loved any of the others." "His father put him in the blackberries with his brothers," Dunk said. "He was fond of blackberries." "I remember. He used to pick them for me, and we'd eat them in a bowl of cream." "The king pardoned the old man for Damon," said Dunk. "It is past time you pardoned him for Adam." "Give me Bennis, and I'll consider that." "Bennis is not mine to give." She sighed. "I would as life not have to kill you."
"I would as life not die."
"Then give me Bennis. We'll cut his nose off and hand him back, and that will be the end of that."
"It won't, though," Dunk said. "There's still the dam to deal with, and the fire. Will you give us the men who set it?"
"There were lantern bugs in that wood," she said. "It may be they set the fire off with their little lanterns."
"No more teasing now, m'lady," Dunk warned her. "This is no time for it. Tear down the dam, and let Sir Eustace have the water to make up for the wood."
"That's fair, is it not?" "It might be, if I had burned the wood, which I did not. I was at Coldmoat, safe abed." She looked down at the water. "What is there to prevent us from riding right across the stream? Have you scattered caltrops amongst the rocks, hidden arches in the ashes? Tell me what you think is going to stop us."
"Me?" He pulled one gauntlet off. "In Flea Bottom I was always bigger and stronger than the other boys, so I used to beat them bloody and steal from them. The old man taught me not to do that. It was wrong," he said, "and besides, sometimes little boys have great big brothers. Here, have a look at this."
Dunk twisted the ring off his finger and held it out to her. She had to let loose of her braid to take it. "Gold," she said, when she felt the weight of it. "What is this, sir?" She turned it over in her hand. "A signet. Gold and onyx." Her green eyes narrowed as she studied the seal. "Where did you find this, sir?"
"In a boot, wrapped in rags and stuffed up in the toe."
Lady Rohan's fingers closed around it. She glanced at Egg and old Sir Eustace. "You took a great risk in showing me this ring, sir, but how does it avail us? If I should command my men to cross..."
"Well," said Dunk, "that would mean I'd have to fight."
"And die?"
"Most like," he said, "and then Egg would go back where he comes from and tell what happened here."
"Not if he died as well."
"I don't think you'd kill a boy of 10. he said, hoping he was right. Not this boy of 10, you wouldn't. You've got 33 men there, like you said. Men talk, that fat one there especially. No matter how deep you dug the graves, the tail would out. And then, well, might be a spotted spider's bite.